Golf Smarter Premium number 521, published on January 5, 2016. Author of Zen Golf, Dr. Joseph Parent, and Mastering the Mental Game of Golf and Dieting.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Dr. Joe.
Pleasure to be here, Fred.
It is great to have you on to help us celebrate the beginning of our 11th year on the Golf Smarter Podcast.
Has it been 10 years since we were on?
Yeah.
We were on the first show, right?
That's right. Episode number one. And I brag about it all the time that episode number one was Dr. Joseph Parent of Zen Golf, and that episode is just as valid today as it was when we recorded it 10 years ago, because the content, you know, is strong and doesn't really change for golfers.
Well, it's been so exciting. We've been in the Zen Golf has been in the top 10 in sales on Amazon since it came out, and that was almost 14 years ago.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I wish I could take some of the credit for getting this, but I'm not going to. It's the content.
You can have some.
No, content is king.
It's been great, and what's really exciting. I went to a meeting. We had a lot of junior golfers as part of a program that we'll talk about later when we talk about the movie that I'm taking part in.
Oh, absolutely.
But, all these junior golfers saying, your book is how I play the game. And these are kids who basically were 2 years old when the book was written.
Wow.
So when it first came out. So these are 16 and 17 year old kids. And we just got a tweet from somebody, so people are picking it up still for the first time. And that's what's exciting for me.
Oh, absolutely. And what's so great about this is the type of book that you can read again and again and again and get something new every time that you read it.
Well, thank you. And that's something else that I take pride in, of how many times people say, I'm on my fourth read of it. And one person said, I read it every year at the start of the golf season just to get my head straight for the rest of the year.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. I wish I could say same, but I don't. But I refer to it all the time because it made such an impact. And, that's what happened. I mean, I started this podcast because your book had such a strong impression on me. And
well,
that
you.
I wanted it, I just felt like everyone talking about mechanics, and it's like, no. There's got to be something else. And
so what can we offer to the people on the podcast who haven't heard me for a while and new listeners?
Well,
and viewers.
Yeah, and viewers too. We're live on Blab.
Since we first were on 10 years ago.
Isn't that amazing? Because 10 years ago, I remember having to explain what a podcast was, and now I have to explain what Blab is. Much different. What I would like to talk about, and it's interesting that you brought up these young kids, we're going to talk about a lot of different things, and we invite the audience to participate since we are live on Blab. They can type in questions, go / Q, type in your question, and we'll pop it up on the screen for Dr. Joe. But it's so interesting because we're, reviewing the 2015 PGA season and LPGA season. And there's a youth movement going on. Clearly, there's a youth movement going on that would have been unheard of 2 decades ago. It's young guns don't come up and dominate the tour the way they do now.
Well, 2 decades ago, the young gun was Tiger Woods, and that was 1997, a little less than 2 decades ago. But he, we had hoped that there would be some that came along with him, but basically it was him alone challenging the older generation and dominating the older generation. And now we've got Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, and Rory McIlroy.
So all in their 20s.
All in their 20s. I thought, wow, what a great made-for-TV event. Jordan and Ricky, the American golfers, against Jason and Rory from Ireland and Australia. So that would be pretty cool.
Very cool. It's very cool. But the thing that blows me away is, you know, these young golfers, they're obviously very well trained. They hit the ball a mile. I think that's changed the game tremendously. But I've always been so amazed at their mental capacity, that their maturity on the golf course, which I think when Tiger came along, people were blown away. It's like, how can this kid be so mature? You know, and it was the whole Zen upbringing that he had. Mm-hmm. And now it just seems to be normal.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I think that there are some of the young players have that kind of focus. But what I think, and I'm really proud of the fact that in the last 14 years, the notion of Zen golf and working on the mental game has become so prominent and so well recognized that makes the difference. And I want your listeners and viewers to understand that the mental game it's not going to add yards to what you're capable of. It will clear the interference so that you can hit it as far as you possibly can. It doesn't make you more accurate, but it takes away the shots that go sideways, so that it clears the interference so that you can be as accurate as you possibly can. What you could say is a golfer's potential is their skill level when there is no interference, when their mental game capacity is at its peak. And what happens when pressure comes, the mental game capacity drops. So the performance, there's a gap in the performance. The reason Tiger was so tough to beat, his mental game was so strong that this was his capability level, and he almost played at full capacity the whole time. So his mental game didn't take anything away from his capacities, his skill levels, where everybody else, they started below his skill level and got diminished. And that was why he dominated by such a great extreme amount. Now, what I think is impressive is that the players today, the young players today, know that that's what they need to work on. So they work on it a lot more than the players of the previous generation who, if they had it, they had it. And, you know, what they said was, well, it comes from experience.
Right.
And now they know that, no, you have to train in it. Like, it's as if saying, well, you know, I just play golf and that's how I get in shape. But Tiger changed that, you know, and Greg Norman and Gary Player all focused on being in better physical shape. And that let them play golf and let them play golf better. So that became pretty well recognized. So everybody hit the physical workout trailer. And now they need to hit the mental game workout trailer.
And everybody seems to have a mental coach with them as part of their entourage.
Not everybody, but, you know, that's the thing. Unlike having a physical trainer, which you need to have with you almost every week, having a mental game coach that you can check in with. Like, I work with Christy Kerr, but I only see her two or three times a year.
Oh, okay.
The rest of the time, we're texting or on the phone. That's fine for working on the mental game. And it's one less person around, you know, in the crowd, which the more people around a player, it's good to have a team, but they're also taking some of the energy. So you got to find a balance there.
I'm curious. You talk about your communication with Christy Kerr, texting, emails. Who initiates that?
Phone calls.
I'm curious about just texting. Is that something that she initiates, you initiate because you've been watching on TV?
We make a plan at the beginning of the year. Mm. And we've worked enough years that we already know the plan, which is that she's going to check in with me on Monday or Tuesday. And if I haven't heard from her by Tuesday evening, I say, want to check in? And she'll either say, no, I'm good, or she'll say, let's talk tomorrow. And we make an appointment to get on the phone. And then during the tournament, I basically look at her scores and say, you know, keep on keeping on when she's playing well, yeah. Or I remind her to stay focused and, you know, just whatever one of the keys that we talked about earlier in the week are, and just send a little reminder. If something's going on that she can't figure out, then we get on the phone and talk. And sometimes if she's playing in Asia, I get up at 2 a.m. to have that conversation with her, whatever it takes.
Yeah. Wherever she is. Do you watch the tournaments that she's in and then you kind of, take notes for yourself? How does that work?
Well, I watch the tournaments. I can't control what pictures they take. It's great to see. And if I see something, I can let her know. And what I mainly want to do is reinforce what she's doing well. Mm-hmm. Golfers, as you know, are pretty good critics of themselves.
So that's a nice way to put it.
Piling on and saying, you really didn't look committed to that one, and have your player say, yeah, tell me something I didn't know.
Yeah.
So I don't need to do that so much as to reinforce the shots that it looked like she really was there and present. And we have an I'll share an interesting thing, which I'm sure is okay with Christy. We have a formula for our focus is on a particular kind of score, and it's not a usual golf score. What we focus on was how many shots she played with full commitment. And full commitment meaning she was ready when it was time to play, and there was no holding back, no guiding, no doubt about making the swing that she planned to make and playing the shot that she planned to play. And when she makes 80% of her shots full commitment, she knows she's going to be in contention.
Wow.
90% she's going to win, which is pretty much what happened in the last tournament of the year this year, the CME Tour Championship. And when she won the LPGA Championship by a record margin of 12 strokes,
wow.
Keep in mind, she shot 19 under and the second best score was 7 under.
Wow.
Which is a really remarkable difference on a golf course. It's pretty much similar to when Tiger won the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach and shot 15 over, and I think the next closest score was 15. He shot 15 under, and the next closest score was 2 under, something like that. So,
well, and Jordan this year dominated one of the majors, didn't he?
And when she did that record margin of victory, she had 98% fully committed shots. In other words, only 6 shots in 4 days was she not fully committed to. And that's an incredible state of mind. That's totally being in the zone.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that something she reported to you? She said 96%, or how did you get to that? How did you quantify that?
Well, the number we figured out, she said, I can only think of half a dozen shots that I wasn't fully committed.
Okay.
And then we do the math.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty much where it came out. So I wanted to share with the listeners and go back 10 years to something that still applies, and I still teach it, and it still makes the difference for people. And that's the par approach that I came up with. That's the kind of the mainstay of Zen golf. There's our
a classic. Cover.
There you go. And that is, you take care of your preparation, which is a clear picture of what you want to accomplish, a commitment, as we just talked about with Christy, to the shot you want to play, and some composure. And we work a lot with breathing and breathing your energy down and getting very grounded.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that, then you can have the action part. So P is for preparation, A is for action. And that action part is swinging with playing the shot without interference, without the interference, particularly of worry about results. And something that Christy came up with, when, because this is the main source of interference from beginners to accomplished world number one players. When they get in their own way, it's worry about results. And Christy came up with the acronym for her. She likes acronyms. So acronyms, the first letters of worry about result are WAR.
Oh, when she goes to war with herself.
When you worry about results, you're at war with yourself.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that is so right on. Yeah. That is absolutely it.
Love that.
So that's the action. The action part is making a swing that you're completely focused on the process without worrying about the results. And then the R is your response to results. Hmm. And you want to reinforce the good shots. When it's not a great shot, you don't want to pick out what's wrong with it. You want to say, oh, that was close. Hmm. And focus on how you could have made it a little bit better. And then when you hit one of those stinkers that doesn't have any redeeming value, instead of saying what's wrong with me, you say, where did that come from?
Right.
That's not my regular swing. What got in the way? And usually at that kind of shot, it's something mental.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you just go back. And so it's a cycle of continuous improvement. You go back to the beginning and say, how was my preparation? Did I have a clear picture, or was I playing an avoiding shot with a negative image? Did I have a commitment, or was I second guessing myself? Did I have composure, or was I trying to get it over with, or rushing it, or anxious? And once you work on that system, that cycle, you can get better as you play. And that's what I think has been the exciting thing about Zen Golf, of players who are shooting their lower scores without changing their swing. They're just getting out of their own way and getting the most out of the abilities they have.
One of the two of my all-time favorite Dr. Joe lines is getting out of your own way, and you made the putt, you just didn't hole it.
Yes, that's my latest golf book is How to Make Every Putt.
Right.
Which, hey, if you got it started the way you wanted, that's all you can control. They don't let you shovel it along into all the way to the hole. One. They don't let you carry it and put it in the hole. All you can do is get the ball started rolling. If you got it rolling with a good stroke on the path you wanted at the pace you wanted, you made your putt. And then you look to see how the ball does about going in the hole.
Yeah.
And the change in people's confidence level, because on the PGA Tour, the average from 8 feet is 50%. So I describe an average PGA Tour putting round. I say, well, God, that guy missed half his putts from 8 feet. That doesn't sound like a very good putter.
Right.
Yet that's the average for the best players in the world. So you don't want your confidence based on how many you hole, because anything further than 8 feet, the odds are you won't hole it.
Right.
So what you want to base your confidence on is getting it started and giving it a chance. And once you do a better job of that, then if it doesn't do what you thought it was going to do, then you get better at reading putts, and mm-hmm. and your game improves and improves and improves. Mm-hmm. So I think that what I've heard, I have a couple of one other one that I think you've told me in the past was a big favorite, and that is people think that if they played better, they'd enjoy the game more. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the other way around. If you enjoyed the game more, you'd play better.
Absolutely. I love that.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I actually, we had, who was it? Well, we had a caddy on, a PGA Tour caddy. I'm blanking on whose caddy it was at the time. But he said, look, if you're having fun, you're a good golfer. It's like, thank you for that permission. I mean, it was such a great thing to say. And it's like, stop beating yourself up. Stop getting in your own way. Enjoy yourself. And if you enjoy yourself more.
I see players and I can tell whether they feel like they're playing well or not. And the funny thing is they say, well, you know, I'm shooting in the 60s or, you know, these are the pros that are talking.
Yeah, right.
60s with my buddies on the, you know, on Tuesday in the practice round. And then I can't break 70 during the tournament. Mm-hmm. And I explained to them that they've got it backwards. They're playing on Tuesday and working during the tournament, and they should be working on Tuesday and playing during the tournament.
Interesting.
The other thing is when a player is playing well and they hit a shot that goes sideways, they go, eh, whatever, one of those, I'll recover, no big deal. When they're playing poorly and they hit the same exact shot, they go, what's wrong with my swing?
Right.
And they start tinkering and messing with it. So it's how they respond to the not-so-good shots that really marks how confident they are. And if they can just brush off one of the not-so-good ones as, oh, that was one of those, then you know that they're on their game. And if one of those sideways ones sends them into a downward spiral, then you know that they're lacking in confidence.
I was going to ask you to define interference, but you gave such great examples of it. I want to go back to commitment and what you find, you know, if we're talking about an LPGA champion who's at 96% on one round and, you know, 80% to be in it, what do we do? What is the average recreational non-tournament golfer? What kind of commitment do we generally give to a round of 18 holes?
How many fully committed shots?
Yeah, that you've witnessed.
A handful.
At best.
A handful, because we're either worried about where we might hit it, mm-hmm. or we're trying too hard to guide it to where we want it to go, or we don't trust that we have enough club and we go after it a little extra hard, or we're afraid we have too much club and we try to take something off of it in mid-swing. And almost always there's some quality of worrying about the results. Very rarely do you see a completely free swing with no concern for how the shot's going to turn out, but purely wanting to produce the feel that they want. And here's the most important thing, trusting that their body is going to produce the feel without their mind, their thinking mind, directing them. So I think the biggest source of, one of the biggest sources of interference is not trusting the swing, but giving yourself a lesson while you're swinging. And one of the chapters in Zen Golf is, during your swing is not a good time to give yourself a lesson.
It's so true.
One of the other ones is, I think it's...
it's okay. You wrote it 14 years ago.
never keep more than 100 thoughts in your mind during your swing.
Yeah.
And I had one student say, I'm trying to get down to 100. So if you're giving yourself instruction while you're swinging, you're thinking, you're not swinging. If all that's in your mind is a particular feel key and an image of the ball flying to the target, then you're swinging without interference. And people say, well, you know, I'm not that good a golfer. How can I trust my swing? Well, what you can trust is that you'll make pretty much the same swing each time in the absence of interference. And that, but, you know, the similarity of your swing from one swing to the next is going to be, it's going to be a little less similar than a PGA or LPGA Tour pro who does it for a living and practices swinging a golf club 6 to 8 hours a day. But you can trust that if you get out of your own way and just put as good a swing on it as you can, that's how you're going to get the best results for you.
Yeah.
And then if you see a pattern show up, then go to your swing instructor and work on that. You know, just work on a little bit of it at a time. Don't try to go back to the drawing board and revamp it every time. Most amateurs don't have the time to put into just changing their entire swing.
Or the mindset.
Mindset they do, because they can practice Zen golf while they play. That's why it works so well for the amateur golfers.
Hmm.
They can practice while they play, and after they've played a shot, they can evaluate and say, how was my commitment? How is my composure? How is my clarity of my picture? And work on that in their pre-shot routine and get better at their pre-shot routine, which is going to make them better at playing their shots. So that's the, you know, that's the bonus. This is, you know, this book is for people who don't have time to practice. I was giving a corporate talk on performance, on the psychology of performance, and somebody asked me, you know, they said, well, I only play once or twice a week, once or twice a month, and can you give me some suggestions on how I can improve my game? And everybody laughed because everybody knows, how are you going to do that without practicing? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, I can give you a suggestion on how you can improve your game. Cultivate your sense of humor. If you only play once or twice a month and you don't have any time to practice, then the only thing that's going to make you better is not getting upset about your shots.
Right. Yeah. Lose all expectations.
Exactly. Let that go. But most players, I ask them, you know, how many times a week do you practice? And most people say once. And I say, is that right? Is that right before your round?
Right.
And they say, yes.
So that's not a practice.
That's not practice. That's warming up.
Right.
I said, how many times do you practice either after a round or when you're not playing? And all the hands went down. Nobody does.
Yeah.
So if you want to get better and you're not somebody who practices, then the only thing you're going to get better at is the mental game.
Right. And that's going to help. I mean, that was the whole premise of Golf Smarter. Right. If you have a strong mental game and you understand the strategy of what you have to do from the flag back to the tee,
given your capabilities, right?
Yeah. Well, you're going to be able to improve much faster than if you just worked on swing mechanics. I've always believed
that. So I have a favorite quote for you from Jack Nicklaus.
Please.
That's reflective of what you just said. Okay. Ask yourself how many shots you would have saved if you always developed a strategy before you hit, always played within your capabilities, never lost your temper, and never got down on yourself. Jack Nicklaus.
It answers a lot of questions. I mean, it seems to be so straightforward until you're out on the golf course and then you start beating yourself up again because things start repeating that you're not trying, that you don't want to happen and you don't understand why, so you tweak and you're...
I have a question for you.
Yes,
Fred.
Sir. Okay.
For you. What young golfer does that remind you of, what I just described? Played within your capabilities, always have a strategy, you know, for managing yourself around the course. Don't lose your temper and don't get down on yourself.
I would have to say for 2015, it was the player that probably dominated the headlines all year round. That sounds like Jordan Spieth to me.
Me too. And that's been the exciting thing for me. Jack Nicklaus was my inspiration for even getting involved in teaching the mental game because I saw the power of his mind in playing golf. And he did not get in his own way. He didn't make mistakes, mental mistakes. And that's why all the other players were so afraid of him because they said, well, he's not going to go the other direction, so I better watch out. And Jordan Spieth reminds me so much of how Jack Nicklaus plays. Everybody was amazed at how he managed the course at the Masters. And when he missed in the right places.
Right.
And his short game was great and helped him get up and down. And unless you have peace of mind, you don't have a short game or putting.
Right.
That is the main determinant of your short game and putting, besides your skills, is your focus and your trust and your peace of mind. So Jordan is really, to me, the model of that. The other player who dominated the headlines towards the end of the year was Jason Day.
Yeah.
And Jason, everybody can see him visualizing because he stops. He takes his deep breath and he closes his eyes and visualizes. And his pre-shot routine is pretty much by the book from Zen Golf of the clarity of visualizing your shot, feeling committed to it, and then breathing your energy down and getting the composure. So all three, the three C's of preparation that I present in Zen Golf, Jason Day is clearly and evidently doing. And a friend of mine, Jason Goldsmith, who's a coach here in Southern California, worked on developing something called the Focus Band. And it was a monitor to see how jumpy your monitor to see how jumpy your mind is or how much in the zone you are. And Jason Day trained with that device for a couple of years that helped him get to number one.
Really? So is this a product that's available?
I think that it is just becoming available. I'm going to try and have some connection with that through my website. But I think that if you search for Focus Band in golf, you can probably find it. And I'm participating along with Jason and a student of mine who is a filmmaker, and he's making a documentary called Be the Ball. This is a young man who was given Zen Golf by his brother. And he was kind of more of a hippy dippy kind of guy. And why would I play golf? And he got into it and was really turned on by the mental game and came to study with me. And so he has been doing interviews on the PGA Tour and a lot of celebrities, including Bill Murray and Samuel L. Jackson. He's got some incredible interviews about the mind and spirit and the part they play in playing golf. And so he's doing this documentary called Be the Ball. And he has teamed up with some professors at USC in the neuroimaging department, and they're doing MRIs, and we're going to work with a number of golfers to see if a training using the Focus Band and using my mindfulness techniques combined can improve their mental games in a 3-month test period and an experiment. And they're going to be measured by the scientists at USC, and it's going to be an experiment that's going to form the core of the movie. So that's going to be happening in 2016.
Very cool. Very exciting. The Focus Band can be found online at ifocusband.com. It's the letter I, then focusband.com. And they have it for golf, baseball, meditation, in business, lots of opportunities. Let's see here.
It's really a biofeedback kind of tool. And helps you to recognize and get feedback for when your mind is busy thinking, mm-hmm. as opposed to when it's calm and clear and in the zone. And it's a great thing to pair with. If you go to my website, zengolf.com, you can get my audiobooks and my videos, and link to a training in mindful awareness and relaxation training. And you combine the two of those, and I think that you're going to get some very powerful results.
Boy, you had mindfulness. Mindfulness seems to be on a very, very hot topic in 2015. You are so far ahead of the curve on that one.
You mean because I started teaching it in 1975?
That could make you ahead of the curve. Wow.
That's why it was Zen Golf. It's so amazing that this little book has really made such a difference. But I think it was ahead of the curve, and people keep catching on to it and recognize that mindfulness in everything you do. You know, another favorite saying of mine is, it's like what you see on a little raffle ticket. Mm-hmm. You know what's printed on a raffle ticket? You must be present to win. So if you
that's
remember
a mindfulness
that,
statement.
If your mind is in the future worrying about results, or in the past thinking about a bad shot you hit before, you're not present and you won't win.
I think that could be the title of another book. You must be crazy.
It's one of the chapters.
Okay.
In the new book. In the new book.
New book. Okay. Segue. Tell me more about the new book.
Well, I'll start with earlier this year. I came out with Zen Tennis.
Okay.
There. Playing in the Zone, that I wrote with Bill Scanlon, who was famous for getting in the zone and beating players ranked far above him. He got to number 9 in the world, so they weren't that far above. But when he was just in the top 20, he beat John McEnroe, who was ranked number 1 in the world and seeded favorite to win the U.S. Open. And Bill got in the zone. And we tell stories of his play in the zone and how that reflects a lot of what I'm teaching of Zen, the Zen principle, the mindfulness principles that help get you there. So, mm-hmm. So we have stories of how Bill played in the zone and my instructions on how you can play in the zone in tennis and anything else you do.
Yeah, is that applicable for golf as well?
What?
It's applicable for golf as well, correct?
Well, it's really taking the principles from Zen golf.
I see.
So if you have that, you have those principles. But tennis is a little different, so it expands it from the golf principles and applies them to tennis. But we're going to go even beyond that.
Tell me more.
And this is coming out January 1st.
The best diet book ever, Zen and the Art of Losing Weight. That is a little bit of a turn from what you've been doing.
Well, it's still performance.
Yeah.
And a lot of the principles in Zen golf of mindfulness and the habit changing techniques that I present for people to change the habit of negative self-talk and getting in their own way. Well, it's about getting out of your own way, because what is the most common New Year's resolution?
I'm going to lose weight. Right.
That's right. And what's the least successful New Year's resolution? Losing weight.
Losing weight and going to the gym.
We're going to help them out. That's right. So we're going to help people out. And the exciting thing about this is there are no recipes or menus. And that's because
that's good.
Food fads come and go and change all the time.
Right.
You can get on the list to advance order at TheBestDietBookEver.com. That's my website.
That is such a great title.
TheBestDietBookEver.com. And the book's going to be coming out January 1st to help you recover from your holiday eating. A lot of the Zen stories and some new ones from Zen Golf are in here. But really the principle is taking a look at your habits. And what happens is we overeat and then we feel bad and beat ourselves up. And then we kind of try to put it out of our mind and then engage in the same habits over and over again.
Sure.
So what this will teach you is, again, how to get out of your own way. And you don't lack willpower. You just don't know how to access it. Hmm. You don't lack confidence. You just don't know how to access it. So this will teach you how to do that. And I'll give you a quick summary of what gets in the way in people's eating habits. I call them the three twos.
Your mouth.
T-O-O.
Okay.
Eating too much.
Okay.
Too fast for too long.
Pretty simple.
So if we work on mindful eating, we can be mindful of how much we're taking. Are our eyes bigger than our stomach? Or are we taking a reasonable portion? Then, if you eat more slowly, you actually enjoy the food more. Instead of shoveling it, you taste each bite. And we discovered a really amazing thing. When you set your utensils down in between bites, you just set them down and put your hands in your lap, your shoulders relax, your jaw relaxes, you chew more slowly, you breathe, you enjoy the food more, and you realize how full you are sooner. So the remedies for the three twos are the three S's. You take smaller portions.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy them. You savor the flavor and eat more slowly. That's the second S, slowly.
Okay.
And you stop sooner.
Wow.
So when you do that, if you exercise the same amount, you'll lose weight. And of course, part of the book is encouraging you to exercise and giving you some helpful hints on how you can get over the inertia barrier.
Mm.
One of them is just get your gear on. Just say, well, I'm too tired to exercise, but I'm going to get my gear on. And once your gear's on, you say, well, really, that's kind of a waste if you don't at least stretch. So then you start stretching. And you say, well, now that you're stretched, you might as well at least do a minute of exercise.
1 minute.
And then you talk. So you talk yourself into it little by little. It's those kinds of things are what we have to offer in here.
And not a single suggested way to eat. It's all about
changing your mindset. No, and that's because what we have in here, there's a little story, a little excerpt from the old Woody Allen movie Sleeper,
mm-hmm.
where he's awakened after 200 years in a coma. Mm-hmm. And the doctors say, ask him, do you want anything to special to eat? And he asks for organic honey, wheat germ, and tiger's milk or something, almond milk or something like that. So one of the doctors says, why would he want something like that? And he said, oh, in those days, those were considered magical substances with life-preserving properties. And the other doctor says, you mean they didn't have deep fat or steak or cream pies or hot fudge? And he goes, no, people thought those were bad for you. And the other doctor says, yeah, but we've discovered that that's precisely the opposite of what we've discovered to be true now. Those are, so if you think about food fads, everything changes and comes and goes. Was coffee bad for you? Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. A study just came out. Coffee's good for you. Was wine bad for you? Yeah. Oh, wait. A study just came out. Wine's good for you.
Right.
Is chocolate bad for you?
No. No.
Something that you thought was bad for you, wait a few months. Oh, it's good for you now.
Yeah, right.
So why would, I don't want to put in recipes and high carb, low carb, high fat, low fat. They all change what you're supposed to eat or not eat.
Right. So like in 14 years.
Exciting thing about the best diet book ever. It's based on a positive choice model. You get to eat whatever you want, whenever you want, and how much you want. You just got to understand if you eat too much, too fast for too long, you're going to gain weight. And if you choose, it's your choice. If you choose smaller portions and you eat more slowly and stop sooner, you'll lose weight. It's completely under your control rather than somebody else imprisoning you in some kind of diet that you're going to rebel against and quit.
At what point did you come up with the idea of going, okay, I've done a lot of golf books. I got that covered. I'll try tennis. Where did dieting come from? How did that?
This has been in the hopper for 30 years.
Oh, wow. Well ahead of golf.
Simple. It was so simple. What I just described to you, I didn't have a book.
Yeah.
I had to collect lots of ideas, and mindfulness was not as in vogue as now.
Yeah.
So I had to wait for the world to catch up to the when I first started this, I just decided to say no to seconds and snacking. And that was enough to lose weight.
Yeah.
If I kept everything else in my routine the same. So I didn't have to forego any particular foods. I just started eating smaller portions and stopping sooner. We actually called a publisher, but there wasn't enough of a book in the 1980s to produce this. But I've always wanted to do it and make it available, and we finally got it done. So
awesome.
January 1st, it comes out. If you go to thebestdietbookever.com, you can sign up for the quote of the week, and we will let you know when you can get it, where you can get it. And in fact, when it first comes out, it's going to be on Amazon, and it's going to be at a substantial discount for the first 2 weeks, I think. So that's the time to get it.
Unbelievable. We talked about Christy Kerr and the work you've done with her before. And I found this quote actually about your book and your help. And she said, "I started winning tournaments after I lost 65 pounds. Losing the weight gave me the needed confidence to succeed. And I've kept the weight off for 14 years. This book can help you lose weight, feel more confident, and help you to have success in your own lives." Amazing. Congratulations, Doc. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Christy had lost the weight before we started working, but it was very much similar principles to what I present in the book. And that's really, I think, harder than losing weight for most people is keeping it off and not doing the yo-yo thing.
Yeah.
And I have a chapter, The Yo-Yo Way of Life, is in here. And that is losing weight and then putting it back on, and then losing it again, and then putting it back on. So Christy's been successful. She 14 years ago, when she was just a youngster on the tour, and she lost the weight, changed her whole appearance, changed her confidence level, and started winning, and has won 18 tournaments now.
Wow.
And I think second leading money winner of all time on the tour. So
phenomenal. Phenomenal.
38 years. So she gave those young whippersnappers a lesson in the last tournament of the year. So it was very exciting to see her come through that way.
Well, congratulations and best of luck with the new book. Obviously, we're going to wrap this up soon, but the diet thing, it's a beautiful segue because there are so many golfers that, you know, refuse to walk the golf course, that are eating the entire time, that are drinking the entire time, and then they're wondering why they can't get the power that they used to, right? I mean, there's so many elements involved, and dieting is just part of it, you know, flexibility and being in decent shape. But I think that's important information for all golfers as well.
So you know, people might ask, how did I do with the dieting? And so I want to show you a picture.
Sorry, audio podcast listeners, you don't get to see it. But
oh yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Sorry,
we'll put it. Well, I don't know if we'll be able to share that or not. But how are you going to show?
We'll see what
this?
We can do.
You got a picture? So there? Is it in the book?
There's the picture.
And wait, what? That's of. Is that you?
That's me 30 years ago.
So you were a high school wrestler?
I'm sorry. That's me 50 years ago. I was the captain.
I would have left it at 30, Doc. You didn't need to go there.
I was the captain of the wrestling team
in high school.
And I am back at that weight now.
Are you really?
And I'm back at that. I'm back at the weight at what I weighed there.
Well, that's worth sharing that.
I was wrestling at 178.
Oh, you got a call coming in.
Sorry about that.
Let's not do that. That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. My son was a high school wrestler for 4 years, and he much lower weight. But I remember just what they had to go through, and he still works out a lot, but he's not at that weight. Nor am I.
So what I'm going to do is, someone suggested, my physical therapist suggested, why don't I get a wrestling singlet and dress up and stand up and I'm going to do it. I'm going to get one and stand up in the same pose, and we'll put that in a later edition of the book.
Spray paint your hair. That's great. Dr. Joseph Parent, the best diet book ever, Zen Golf, a classic. If you are a golfer and do not have it on your shelf, you're not really a golfer. Just got to say it. You can't be claimed to be a golfer who wants to improve, make your life better, unless you have Zen Golf on your bookshelf. It's a must read.
I want to encourage you. There are people who are not that much interested in reading.
Yeah.
But I recorded the audiobook.
Oh, wow.
So you can listen to it. Go to zengolf.com. And right there, you'll see the products in the audiobook. You can download it and
love
listen
audiobooks.
To it in pieces on the way to the golf course. Pick a chapter on the way to the course.
In addition to listening to the Golf Smarter podcast, of course.
Of course. Well, you listen to the Golf Smarter podcast and then a chapter of Zen Golf and then tee it up.
There we go. I love it. All right, Doc. Well, I'm just so excited for your new year, and the book is going to be out January 1st. And thank you again for helping me launch year 11 and year 1 of Golf Smarter.
My pleasure.
It is always great to have you back on, because just like reading the book one more time, it's like, yes, got it. Oh, I'm so glad I heard that again. Thanks
so
much.
We'll stay together. Maybe we should make this annual instead of every 10 years.
Well, you've been on like 9 or 10 times already on the show, so you've been on a lot.
Time flies.
Yeah,
time
sure
flies.
Has. Thanks so much, Doc. Happy
Sounds
New Year.
Great. Thank you, Fred.
Have you had a chance to watch a recent Golf Smarter interview live at blab.im yet? So Blab is an iOS app and an interactive site on your Chrome browser. Why I've been so excited about utilizing Blab to record each new episode over the last few months is because now you have the option to watch or listen to each new show. Obviously, your preference is to listen. For me, there's many reasons why I prefer to listen to my favorite podcasts, like when I'm driving or walking the dog. But I still watch a lot of online video. Don't you these days? Oh, it's incredible. Well, on January 13th, Blab is hosting Podcast Fan Day, and I'd like you to be my guest. I want to invite you in. That's right. It's Golf Smarter Open Mic, and I want you to join me. Enough about me already on this show. Let's talk about you. Any stories you'd like to share, comments you have on past episodes, ideas for Golf Smarter in 2016, or questions that you have for me. Anything you'd like, let's talk. Subscribe to the episode right now. It's Wednesday, January 13th. Put it on your calendar with an alarm. Go ahead. I'll wait. You can pause it. It's 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Either download the app or go to blab.im. Not .com, it's .im. Once there, search golf or Golf Smarter, and subscribe to Podcast Fan Day and check out some of our other episodes. Now, you better join me or I may never talk to you again. Yeah, all right. Up next, Ken Doherty, head golf professional at Marin Country Club, will join us to talk about his latest article, A Quiet Mind for Golf. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at the all new golfsmarter.com.